Is there a John Luck Pickard here?
Star date 97796.38. Welcome to Star Trek Discovery Pod, the number one podcast about human bunny corns.
Hey, I'm a bunny corn.
Grant Davis is dressed up like a bunny corn. My name is Mike Moody, and my favorite existential philosopher is Jean-Paul Sartre.
My name is Clyde Haynes, and my favorite existential author is, I'm going to go with Friedrich Nietzsche.
Oh,
yeah.
Do nice. Something a little different.
Nice call. And I'm Mariah Gossa, and my favorite existential author that I can think of in this moment is Albert Camus.
I'm Grant Davis, and my favorite existential philosopher, I'm going to go with Chidi from The Good Place. I'm going to steal that joke someone made.
Pronounce his last name.
Adegonye.
Hey, yeah. Not bad. Mm. All right. We're not here to talk about The Good Place. We're here to talk about...
What better place? Star Trek.
Picard, I think it's called.
Picard. We're breaking down episode 8 of Picard, The Broken Pieces, a.k.a. the late season exposition dump. This episode was written...
Someone's already given a hot take.
So you say, Mike.
This episode was written by the one and only Shabone!
Shabone!
Directed by Maha Vrilo, who also directed The Impossible Box, one of my favorite episodes of this season. Got in Girardi's box. Before we dive into episode 8 of Picard, I want to remind our audio-only listeners that we are streaming the pod live on YouTube every Thursday during season 1 of Picard. So go to StarTrekPod.co, click on that YouTube link, watch us live Thursday 9 p.m. Central on YouTube. If we get enough viewers, we'll be doing this live for Star Trek Discovery.
With more costumes.
Season 3, with more costumes. Grant will wear more costumes.
Yes, Grant will wear more costumes.
This is true. I will try to wear costumes every single episode.
Oh, I'm into this challenge. All right.
Oh, I like that. That sounds like fun.
Yeah.
hey, not only are we live streaming on YouTube, but we would love for you to engage with us. See what I did there? Engage with us.
Star Trek.
Thank you. There you go, newbie. No, but if you want to, we want to hear from you. So jump in the chat. And if you type in pod, capital P, capital O, capital D, that'll help us hear, if you will, or see if you want us to respond to you. But do that closer to the end of the show where we can have a chance to see what your questions and your comments
are. You can also tag us at Star Trek Pod in the comments. Also, if you are listening or you want to tell your friends about the show, you can visit StarTrekPod.co to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. We're on Apple. We're on Spotify. We're all of the places. You can also listen to our entire back catalog if you're getting ready to do another binge right before the new season of Discovery is supposed to come out this spring. We cover all the seasons 1 and 2, and you can listen to it all at StarTrekPod.co.
Yeah. You center that camera there.
Yeah,
fix, I need things. To. I'm a little bit too. I think I must have bumped it. Mm. Anyway, hey folks. yes, we're on YouTube. You should definitely go over there and hit the like button, hit the subscribe button, tell everyone, and engage with us on the chat, like Clyde said. But you can also help us out by promoting the show. That's a free way. That's great. Giving us that that iTunes review, of course, free way. But go to Patreon.com and. Patreon.com/StarTrekPod and give us that that sweet money.
So we can buy more costumes.
More costumes. I need more bunny corn costumes.
Grant had to buy this out of his own pocket.
Please help a Grant not have to purchase costumes on his own dime.
I'm poor now. I can't even afford a razor to shave this gross whatever I'm trying to grow on the face. So Patreon.com/StarTrekPod. You make a $2 an episode donation and join us in our private exclusive Slack channel, where we are discussing all the final theories as we get near the finish line of Picard and we gear up for season, 8 of Discovery? I don't know. It's been on for a while.
3.
But join us.
It's season 8.
It's going to be a lot of fun. $2 an episode. We make it worth it. So, yeah, go do that.
All right. Pitch over episode 8 of Picard, Broken Pieces. Who's got some hot freaks?
Hot freaks!
Yeah.
is going
That's
first.
A thing now. Hot Freaks is
Hot
a
Freaks.
Thing.
Hot Freaks is happening.
Courtesy right. of Mariah.
You're hot welcome.
Can I drop my hot freak?
Do it.
Okay. This was all silliness, right? This episode was all silliness. Come on.
Is there something wrong with silliness?
No, not at all. But, I mean, Rio's kind of hiding in his cabin, the whole sitcom with Rafi and all the holograms. I mean, that opening flashback was kind of straight out of like a 90s sci-fi channel series. It was so like overdone. I didn't love this episode.
I thought you were going to love the whole hollow kind of discussion.
I'm not saying I didn't like it. I'm just saying it was.
I mean, episode one, you were all into it.
It was a little silly.
Episode one, you were all into the multiple Rios.
Listen, I didn't love this episode. Sorry. Shaboom!
Right.
But I really did appreciate it.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
I appreciated it more than I liked it. It brought us closer to the finish line. It gave us that info dump. Everybody's around a table being like, here's what I know. And let's go to the finale. So that was good. It kind of felt like Chabon was experimenting with the tone and with like the dynamics of the characters a little bit. Like the tone was kind of off here and there. It was kind of like, it was kind of hard to get a grasp on the tone of this episode. But I'm trying to think about it in a positive way. Like maybe Chabon, I know that's not how you pronounce his name. Chabon! Maybe he's like experimenting with the tone of the show and with the dynamics of the characters.
He's experimenting with the Chatone!
The Chatone?
Oh, no.
Negative. Chanel!
I need a fan so I can whack it. Chanel!
It all felt really kind of uneven, but maybe we'll get like a more, I don't know, even kind of tone and pace next season. Yeah, some good, some not so good. I absolutely love Picard not understanding how to fly the ship, like my grandpa trying to work his Amazon Fire Stick. That was fun. And Allison Pill is the MVP again. She rules.
Someone's
she
got
is
a crush.
Do not put her character in space jail, please.
Shaboner!
Better. Accepted.
I mean, it was a mixed bag. It was all set up and there was some good stuff, but I don't know, a little silly.
I'm gonna say I had a different take. I had a different hot freaks. I love this episode. I thought the tone was different, but it was a good different for me, right? So I think we got answers, and to me there's some things that were set up early on in the show. And we finally got some payoff, right? We got the multiple hologram, the hollow emitter payoff, right? We've been seeing them, you know, here and there. Now we understand how many they are, what they do, and that they all have pieces of Rio. So that I enjoyed that. I also thought that we finally got to see that one. Allison Pill, or Jurati in this case, the emergency medical hologram knew exactly what happened. So all these things that were kind of loose threads, they came together. We got a couple fight scenes, some action scenes. I mean, Seven is Borg? Come on, like the Borg Queen? We got
that
some,
was kind of dumb.
That was kind of hot. So I just felt like it moved along. We've got some action. We got answers. And it to me, it makes the next two episodes they're gonna be fantastic. I'm super positive.
Fair points. I'm gonna amend my hot freak. All of the Seven of Nine stuff was great.
Agreed. So I'm probably more Camp Clyde as far as my hot freak goes. I think the MVP of this episode was Santiago Cabrera as Rios because he had to play all of those characters in one episode, and it's really hard acting against things that are not there.
Hey, Lassie.
Very difficult. Also, lots of fun references to Scotty, you know, the Scottish engineer.
Yeah.
Good times. Sure. But yeah, overall, I really liked it. I think a lot of new Trek misses out on the camp of old Trek. And so this, to me, felt very like old school Voyager, where there's like things that are explained through the magic of Trek. And I enjoy that. And it was... you know, a little bit of an escapism. I'm so glad we finally got some pieces put back together because I've been really missing the fact that there weren't any bows tied at the end of any of these episodes. And so the fact that we're finally getting a few endings tied up and we're getting ready for the finale Anyway, I enjoyed the episode. I thought it was fun. I liked the campy silliness of it. It reminded me a lot of old school Voyager. So hot freak for Mariah. Giving it 10 out of 10 freaks.
10?
10 out of 10 freaks.
Yeah. No, do you really stand by that? 10?
Freaks, specifically.
Okay.
That's a lot of power, though.
It's a freak.
Yeah.
A freak. Yeah.
That's a lot of freak.
I
this
back
have
you
no
up.
Real value. okay, hot freak.
I don't think so, sir.
You're
very valuable.
I think that, mixed bag, it definitely felt like they're obviously info dumping here a bunch. It felt very claustrophobic on the ship. I thought just like, I know they're moving about the ship, but it felt a little bit smaller in comparison to episodes where they're out exploring different worlds, that everything was pretty much contained there, except when they broke away to the stuff going on in the Borg cube. But that said, I thought there was some surprisingly funny moments. There were a lot of elements of the story where I thought, oh man, if this was the first few episodes, it was going to be really sloppy and ham-fisted. But instead, they set me up for what I thought was just like an easy trope, and then they kind of swerved in a direction. I was like, oh, okay, that's a more clever or more reasonable way to handle things. Like, for example, I find like so often someone will confront Picard, and Picard will irrationally just be like, just let's not even vet Soji. And everyone will shrug and like, it's Picard. Okay, fair enough. But Raffi was like, no, fuck you, man. I think we need to do a little bit of an investigation here. And I like that she kind of held him to that, because it did seem with Jurati, with Soji, this is a problem and a blind spot for Picard. So I was appreciating kind of moments like that. And overall, I like that we finally got the bigger plot fleshed out, what's kind of going on with the Romulans. I don't know if it's necessarily the most exciting. It's more like it's just an annoying cult that is dangerous at the end of the day, rather
like
than
most
like
cults.
It's just a dangerous cult. Yeah. Instead of like them trying to stop a future prophecy, they're just trying to not recreate what happened in the past. I don't know. But overall, I liked it. I think this is obviously just moving us into position for the last two episodes to be pretty exciting. Yeah.
I got to say, this was my favorite kind of Raffi episode. Like, I love the fact that she kind of came together and gave a really consistent, I don't want to say performance, but her character was...
You got to see more of it.
Sober,
right?
For the first time, right?
Mm-hmm. She had something to do. She was a detective in this episode.
Right.
The whole investigation was led by her. I like that.
Well, and she was a critical piece of the team, right? Mm-hmm. Not just the hacker who comes in there and does this thing and then, you know, trottles off back to her room, but she actually was a key component in bringing this all together. And I got to say, Mike, early on when we were talking about O, Commander O, you mentioned that maybe there, I think it was you who mentioned maybe that she was a Romulan. Well, I just want to say, it looks like you're right.
She's half.
She's
half. Yeah, half Vulcan, half Romulan, for
so
sure.
So we all were sort of right.
Sort of right.
Yeah. I will take the props.
I'll take the 25% right that I think I was.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you. So let's dive a little deeper into this episode. First, let me try to unravel the gist of this anti-synth conspiracy that we kind of learned about in this episode that... Okay, so if someone in the Alpha Quadrant reaches a certain advancement or a threshold in creating synthetics, the Zatbash are afraid that the Quadrant will be visited by an unknown evil force that will cause the apocalypse, basically, right?
The Destroyer.
I'm assuming they just really mean, like, the concept of singularity, right?
Well, sure, but... The Zatbash were the only ones who knew about this, you know, and that's why they work in the shadows to prevent anyone from reaching that advancement point. But it can be argued that the Zatbash are kind of unleashing a worse evil on the world, because with all their murdering and spying over the decades, you know, and they like it's all based on a vision that somebody had out in some random planet.
And their interpretation.
And their interpretation of it.
And their particular proclivity for... irrational, yeah. like emotional, visceral response.
It's all based.
Isn't that what the Romulans do more?
Yeah. And it's all based on this fear and this like old message, this old like end times message from like their old fundamentalist racist, you know, grandparents.
it literally is, we've got to kill this entire race lest we die.
Right. So you're talking about the singularity. What's happening?
I don't know. Grant is signaling. We're trying to figure it out.
I'm so sorry. I was just going to move Clyde's mic to the side to his mouth so people can see your mouth.
Oh, I see. There
but
we
now
go.
We're peeking behind the...
Okay, so correct me if I'm wrong.
No idea what's going on here.
Correct me if I'm wrong. The singularity is when AI will reach a point of existence where it can think for itself and take over the world, right? Pretty much.
Is that the plot of Terminator?
Yeah.
So,
and
yeah.
What's going on here is that the Zatwash want to prevent that, but I'm not really sure they want to prevent that. It's just that I really like that. I think it was Rios who compared the turning point in synthetics to the First Contact. Because in First Contact, which was a good thing, mm-hmm. that's when the Vulcans realized that the humans had reached warp capability. And so we hit a certain threshold in technology. And the Vulcans stopped by and visited us and helped us develop that technology so we could become the Federation in Star Trek. And what we're seeing here is a fear of the inverse of that, that we get to a certain level of tech in synthetics that the Vulcans won't, like, a good race won't come and help us. An evil race will come and destroy us. I'd like that duality.
Yeah, and I think, you know, we can kind of, as we make our way down, you know, a lot of the books that were in, like, Rios's bookshelf are, you know, I think are referencing a lot of the same things that you're sort of talking about and sort of the Vulcan approach versus the Romulan approach to a lot of these tactics. I did look up a technical definition of the singularity, just so we had it. It is a hypothetical future point in time at which technological growth becomes uncontrollable and irreversible, resulting in unforeseeable changes to human civilization.
Yeah, that's exactly what this is.
When yeah. it starts teaching itself more rapidly than we can handle.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I was like, such a hot concept right now, because everything is talking about AI.
AI is so hot right now.
AI is so hot right now.
That's what's hot in the streets, kids.
It's coming out. but to kind of jump around a little bit, so some of the books that were on his shelf included, also, I had to point out, this dude loves print books and vinyl. Like, what decade is he from?
No, I love it.
Well,
and a Walkman.
Yeah. How's your Walkman?
To be fair, he's the third captain in Star Trek that we've seen, fourth, who has a vinyl record player on screen.
Still
it's,
holding
it's given
up.
To you when you get the rank.
Georgiou had one.
True.
What's your name? Janeway, your favorite,
yes.
had one. And Kelvin verse Kirk played the Beastie Boys on his mm-hmm. when he's like having sex with two girls in his house.
You know, they all know it's the best way to listen to music. Mm-hmm. Anyway, so there's Camus, The Concept of Dread. There was
Kierkegaard.
Yeah, Kierkegaard. It's all to do with, like, religion and death. And so I was like, this dude is like a depressed cheaty to bring him back in this.
Can you – isn't depressed cheaty kind of an oxymoron?
True. But the one that I found very interesting was Sarek, who is the, you know, a Vulcan philosopher who's been referenced throughout Trek for
Spock's
a long time.
Daddy.
Correct. He's been mentioned in a ton of Trek. And so I went back and I found one of his speeches from the original series where they're about to fight. Oh, it's a great episode where they go to fight the weird clay looking monster things that are weird and furry. Mm-hmm. If you look up like best alien species of OG Trek, it's always on that list. Bunny corns included.
yeah.
But essentially, he says the Vulcan logic is that all sentient species are capable of arriving at a common understanding because logic is universal to all life. And it is upon this principle that the Federation aims, in theory at least, to operate. It isn't always more logical to heal and cooperate than to risk death for no reason. So, opposite to the Romulans.
I feel like with Rios, it's a continuation of the failure of the future Federation society to recognize trauma and pain and mental manipulation, whatever. And properly diagnose and help people with that.
Yeah, like what's up with kicking out Rios and Rafi as soon as they're just like, y'all are crazy, you got weird theories, you read too much philosophy, and you're obviously depressed. Like, get out of here.
Oh, and let's not forget about Girardi, who basically pointed out to them, I was brainwashed into a Manchurian candidate to kill this person, and I couldn't tell you guys because there was something in my brain preventing me. And they're like, you better turn yourself in. You done goofed.
Okay, let's be honest. That's never going to happen, right?
No.
It's never not, but it was still like Picard laying on the guilt trip rather than being like, oh, yes, I too have murdered thousands of people when I was Locutus, the Borg dude. Yep.
Huh. What's interesting is that
I'm remembering stuff.
Yay.
I thought that it was really clean that Rios's trauma, as well as Rafi's, you know, she got kicked out of Starfleet. It's tied to the synth thing. Mm-hmm. And then she was like going down the rabbit hole, these QAnon theories
vindication. She's like, exactly. My time to shine by conspiracy shit.
But I think it's really clean and it really like, buoys the idea of this being a team that's maybe destined to be on this mission, because Rios's trauma is tied to the whole synth thing. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so is Rafi's, so is Picard's.
Good job, writers.
Obviously, so is Girardi's. This is making me feel good. This is part of the episode I really liked.
Well, you know, I've been asking for this for a long time, right? I've been looking for
the team up.
And I got it in this episode. So finally, I've got just about everybody. If I can just get Seven and Elnor back on this ship, I will be in perfect peace. Because now we understand why they're together. Because every one of them has been, not only do they have trauma for some reason, they've all been kind of kicked out and exiled from whatever group they were originally a part of.
And it's all kind of based on this synth.
And it's all based on this synth.
You know, ban. Right? Yeah.
And so this is exciting because now I go, okay, now I know why these individuals are together. I know how they're helping each other. And you can start to see that together they do have a pretty strong team. What it's really doing for me is putting me in a place where I kind of feel like I was with Discovery, only I thought Discovery was better executed in the first season, is it's making me go, wow, the second season of this could be pretty good.
Me too. That's what I was saying earlier with my hot freak. Like, I can see them playing with the tone. I can see the... What?
I like just how sincerely
that's
you go.
That's what I was saying with my hot freak.
With my hot freak. Like, it's just not a term so that hot. Should ever be said with, like...
This better is than a Star Trek freak, podcast. Right?
You're freak. Dressed as a fucking unicorn.
And a I laugh bunny when bunny corn. Hot freak.
A bunny corn.
Yeah, what I was saying was, during my hot freak, Clyde... I came upon the point, and I don't remember my point.
No, we're talking about the
team
season
up season two.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. The way the writers are kind of playing with the dynamics of these characters and the tone, it makes me feel like they're really trying stuff out so they can really nail it down for season two. Like, how can we make all these characters click with each other? Who works best with each other? What's the best tone going forward? I kind of seen that. It's interesting watching Chabon play with these characters that way, and hopefully we'll get a more like a cleaner season two that kind of clicks.
I just think they're gonna need a bigger ship.
We're gonna need a bigger boat.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Right. It gets me.
You know, and then not to belabor the point, but how this show is addressing the different ways in which people are coping with trauma and pain, I think it's kind of fascinating to see, like, with Girardi, it seems a little bit like a denial. Like, she's not really facing it, or she's just kind of retreating from other people. Picard, similarly, has just basically pretended he's a whole other person. And then, like, no, I love vineyards and just sitting down here and hanging out with these lame Romulans. Everyone else loves those Romulans, I guess.
Yeah.
I'm alone on this ship.
You are alone on that.
But then looking at how Rios, like, he's just like, well, I'm just going to Horcrux my pain into all these different, like, hologram dudes. And then kind of troubleshoot and manage how each of them relates to me so that it's never me fully having to kind of face this. He's compartmentalizing in, like, a... It seems to work for him in so much as he's isolated himself from everyone else anyway. So maybe it is helpful. But in the long run, once other people kind of see what's going on, it's like, oh, no, dude, that is clearly avoidance.
Do you think, you know how during the whole Rafi investigation, she was trying to get to the heart of this traumatic point for Rios to figure out why he freaked out when he saw Soji and hid himself away. So she's asking all the holograms, and none of them can access that memory or that point. That's pretty much the only thing they can't access. Obviously, he went in and erased it all after he scanned himself. Do you think that he was experimenting with them to do that? So maybe one day he could do it on himself?
Like Eternal Sunshine himself?
Yeah, exactly.
Ah. Maybe. I thought I had a few. I wrote down a note in my phone that just said death notes.
Hey.
Which was just wow, one. I think Hugh's death is still futile.
Still hurts.
Still hurts. It was.
I agree. I wasn't here last week.
Yeah.
And I got to say, I hated that.
I hated it. I don't think it was necessary. I hope they bring him back in some way, shape, or form. I'm not happy about it.
See, I was thinking about that too, because I hated the way they did it. And I did think that it was, you threw away a character.
Yeah.
I'm hoping that the intent behind it was they needed something to really galvanize Seven of Nine and push her to do this thing that she would never do,
yeah,
which is become this Borg queen.
Then I might have needed that back and forth from her a little bit more than to really feel that.
But why did they gotta fridge everybody on this show?
I mean, like, that was a mess. But again, I'm not saying that the execution was done in a way that connected that. But I was looking because, again, when we talk about tone and we talk about the pacing, which overall I liked, I thought in spots we moved really quickly. And from to get Seven of Nine basically to show up, kill some people, save Elnor, and to become the Borg Queen, all in kind of like the B-plot, it did feel like it moved fast. And it was kind of like the only reference we got to was, where's Hugh? And so I thought, wow, I didn't see any depth, any emotion, you know.
Well, we missed that a little bit. Once again, not only do they not really pay tribute to Hugh, they mercilessly execute all these XBs.
Yes.
And they seemed like they were, like we were talking about last week, seemed like they were trying to point out, like, oh, these are valuable lives. Like, they can be saved and you can rehabilitate them. But then they're just like, pew, 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 dead. It doesn't matter. And I was bugged by that again in this episode. And I had another question for you guys about the Borg. It seems like Seven of Nine was a little bit too willing to, like, jump in and assume the role of Borg Queen. And my limited understanding of what the Borg were is just, like, genocidal, essentially. Or, like it seems awful to the point where there should have been a much huger ethical dilemma about her doing that, and like more dire circumstances than like, oh, it's we want to just do self-preservation, right?
Well, it was less about self-preservation. She also wanted to save all the XBs and the, I guess, hundreds of Borgs that they have yet to unplug from the collective who could be potentially saved from that life.
Not anymore.
Nope. Yeah. So that was really what it was about. She was kind of continuing Hugh's work in that way. Like, the only way we're going to save these hundreds of Borg is if I plug myself into collective, make a mini collective, and try to save everybody. And I really thought she sold the suffering of that moment that she had to go through to do that.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's like a junkie returning to the shit, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like, this is bad for me. This is terrible. It'll erase everything
just
good.
Just going to take a little hit.
Just a little hit. Just a little bit. It's going to erase everything I've become so far in the past like 20 years, but I might like it and I might stay there.
Mm-hmm.
And the Borg that I control, they might like it too. It was a total callback to her first arc on Voyager where she didn't, they unplugged her from the collective, but she wanted to go back.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, she, that sense of order that the collective offers can be tantalizing, and it is to her.
Well, I think the other thing that we heard is that when you're part of the collective, it's like being in a room full of all these people you know.
Mm.
And then when you're unplugged, all of a sudden you're completely isolated.
Right.
So it's like the faucet's running and then you just turn it completely off.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, I can understand how that's like tempting. I thought that was one of the best kind of lines that she had in the entire episode. And I agree, it gives us this insight into, wow, this decision. Again, I thought it could be a little bit more nuanced, but there was this moment where you look and go, okay, now I understand that she may not want to go back. And it made me curious. will she go back? And then, you know,
they're setting up something. Yeah.
I mean, I'm assuming she's going to like take this Borg cube to go rescue Picard and everything, right?
Yeah. But how will it affect her?
Right.
You know, will it change her more? Will she
run into an activated Borg cube?
Exactly.
So,
I think that has to come.
Like at the end of the episode, the Borg Queen entity allowed her to be like, go, right? She goes back to being 7 of 9.
She was the queen. She was in control of the ship.
She plugged herself into the
right,
the
but it seemed
ship.
Like she was not fully herself. She was something more.
She was not and, seven, nor was she Annika.
And
she
when not. Her eyes are black and she's talking, I figured that's Borg Queen mode. Mm-hmm. And Borg Queen says Annika has other things to do. So it seems like there's two personalities, right?
Yeah. Well, Annika became a personality in the collective. Like,
so like when she let her go at the end of the episode, mm-hmm. was that her saying? Maybe this is her future destiny to be a Borg Queen, but right now she's done with this.
Oh,
for the
maybe,
story.
Maybe.
I thought like
that's the way I
she was able to escape.
Right. I don't think we've seen the last of her being plugged into that cube.
Really, in this season.
In this season, I
only got a couple episodes to go.
Yeah, it's
maybe.
Be tough.
Yeah.
I was looking and going, great, they've got a Borg cube. It's being regenerated, and yet they have no Borg. Well, they've got some new ones.
They've got
some new ones. But
the XPs.
Well, not just XPs. It looked like they were assimilating the Romulans.
The Romulans.
Right? Yeah. So it looks like they've got a few new ones. But I think the issue is going to be she had an army. That would have been interesting. You talk about the power she would have had to deal with is not only does she have a Borg cube, not only does she have the collective, but she also has an army. She literally would have been the queen.
Fenris Rangers, we just got a new sponsor on our Patreon. Pretty sweet deal.
Yeah, big if army. All those Borg weren't blown out into space, it might have been more alluring to her to stay plugged in so she can control all those hundreds of Borg. Yeah.
That scene, though, where Incest Sister was walking with her henchman dude, and then the Borg just like come in and snap his neck. Mm-hmm. I was like, "Bug!" This is
very
intense.
Like
and
zombie they, apocalyptic.
Yeah, they swarm. Were the Borg like, kind of zombie-ish?
Oh yeah,
yeah,
yeah. Okay. They're space zombies, totally.
But then it looks like she gets beamed out, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Anyone else saw that? Yeah,
Nerissa
dude, what's
does.
Up with Nerissa? She called Elnor a freak. It's like, he's not the one fucking his brother, yeah,
right?
You're not better than me.
I keep wanting to call him Elnor.
Eleanor?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I think it's nice that we kind of understand who some of these players are in this weird Jatvash family.
Zatvash.
The auntie.
There's an auntie who's the tarot card lady.
Right.
Yeah.
And then you've got Nerissa and Eric.
Yeah. That whole scene. Okay, the whole intro sequence, I thought was kind of badass.
Silly.
Really? Like, I thought the flying through space with the narration, like, just visuals and the cinematography, like, for this whole episode was kind of interesting, especially with how they had to play with being stuck on that ship for a lot of the episode. But I liked how they coursed through to this little table sitting on a green electric table on a pensive or whatever is going on.
It's like,
there.
Grab the electric fence.
Yeah.
Don't wheeze on the electric fence.
It was just it was weird and fun sci-fi that I wish we were getting a little bit more of that in this episode. But like just trying to like delve into whatever their whole mythology is with the eight planets, that made me think, oh wait, are there? We don't know how many of
it's
the
eight suns
around one planet. It's a hot planet.
Hot planet.
I liked it. It felt very like coveny, witchy, which I was into. And then it also reminded me a lot of like our time crystal time, like the time we spent with time crystals.
Oh, and that weird cave thing?
Yeah, in Discovery. So I was like, this is very reminiscent of that, you know, as far
it's
as
like fantasy elements.
Yeah, fantasy mythology getting layered into the whole
thing. It just turned into like
show.
A Disturbed music video where they just started shooting each other or shooting themselves in the face and tearing at their face.
Yeah, this is my other death.
Why'd you ruin it?
Death note.
Death notes.
Death notes.
Death note two.
There was an insane amount of talk or showing of suicide in this episode.
Well, eight people killed themselves in the first five minutes.
And Jurati said, I wake up every day and want to kill myself.
Yeah. And then we get the entire you know, sort of spoken visual of how Rios lost his captain.
Killed himself.
A phaser in the mouth.
In the mouth.
Oof.
Suicide, kids, don't do it. We also learned
if you or someone you love needs help, please reach out.
Yes. We were talking about the tarot card reading lady, Auntie Ramda is her name. I think it's
Auntie Ramda.
Auntie Ramda. Do you guys kind of think that they're, are they trying to redeem everybody, even the bad people, like Nerissa? Because they're obviously, like, with Jurati, you talked about this earlier, Grant, she, when O fed her the mind meld and basically forced her into killing Maddox and almost killing Soji, and the way that Jurati talks about that, it's like, it's almost like I became a different person. It's kind of like temporary insanity. So maybe she can be let off the hook. But can we also say that about Nerissa? Can we say that about the Anti? Can we say that about all the Zatbosh? Because they saw the same thing, which influenced their terrible actions.
But can we say that for certain, that vision they saw was legit?
It doesn't matter. They believed it.
Right.
Well, they believed it, but like, is O manipulating them to her own means? Okay. I don't know. Like, right.
I guess my point is, do you think people who do bad things for the sake of religion or cults are redeemable?
No.
No.
So.
I mean, or whatever you believe.
Nerissa is a psychopath, but
right.
I think what they're trying to get us to wrestle with is not even so much this cult for the right reason, but are they right? Right? In this element, do they know something that no one else knows? So these horrible acts are actually justified for the greater good.
Well, then we're back to our age-old Star Trek question of free will versus determinism. Mm-hmm.
And no, Mariah, and no, Clyde. The future is left for us to write.
Yoda is here, everybody.
I'm Optimist Picard.
Bunny corn Yoda.
Optimist Picard.
I thought that was a good scene.
Fear Another, is the great destroyer.
It was a good scene with Picard and Rios, where Picard is basically telling him, you know, we have the greatest, you know, weapons against cynicism, against evil. You know, we have...
But where was that guy the rest of this season? All of a sudden he comes in like pure of heart and like optimism, like well, no, feel good, and I'm
he,
like...
He showed that at the beginning of the season when he was talking to the reporter.
Appealing to the ideals.
Exactly, yeah.
But and then
that,
he got
And
cranky.
He's back to that again.
He didn't eat lunch.
He got some scrambled eggs. He's good to go.
You can't tell me you guys didn't like... OG Star Trek fans, you didn't like that scene. You didn't like Picard standing up for the what we know as Federation ideals in that point.
Yeah. It goes back to the Vulcan like philosopher that we were just talking about a little bit earlier, right? It's the ideals of Starfleet being that we can seek peace and we can do it through, you know, understanding and discovery and science and all of these other points of reason rather than falling onto emotional swords and going into war for no reason.
And I like how also again, maybe I liked this episode more than I thought I did.
Come on over, Mike.
I liked how clean it was where Rios is worried about going to this planet where Soji is from. She's like, in an hour, she unlocked a bunch of abilities that are way beyond us. Like, she jacked my ship in 2 seconds.
Like, I did like that his override is the lullaby his mom used to sing to him.
Great. In Spanish. I love it.
Yeah, it was cute.
And now we're going...
Just sensitive Rios.
And Rios has his uneasiness about going to a planet full of these people. Like, are they just, it's going to be bad. But that gives Picard the opportunity to remind him about the Federation ideals, the Starfleet ideals that we all remember that were back, that were leading Picard in his day. Kind of what we miss about this version of Picard.
So I agree. I love the fact that he stood up in this manner, because it did give us a glimpse to that old Picard. And I like what they're doing. I want to feel it more, this
optimism, this, determinism.
Well, not so much that. I want the wrestling with, are they wrong, right? Is the optimism wrong? And I think we're getting it in bits and pieces, but we're getting it from crazy people. Right, we are, right? Like, I'm not going to believe O for anything. Yeah, I'm just not going to believe O, right? Like, no matter what happens, the way you've set that character up, you've not given me one reason to really trust her.
Those sunglasses alone.
Right. There's no way I'm going to trust Narissa. I'm not going to trust Narek. Right. Now, when Rio says it, this is the first time you've said it through someone to where I'm going, right? He's questioning it. So I feel like if there was an opportunity to create this narrative coming from people who you've built up as somewhat credible, then I'd be torn a little bit more. As it kind of exists now, I'm just thinking that they're ultimately wrong.
Well, being somebody who doesn't put the sins of the father on the sins of the son, you know, like we shouldn't, or, you know, my great grandpa maybe was racist and told me to be racist to people, and I'm not, you know?
And I love you for it, Mike.
I appreciate it. It just feels like that's kind of the narrative we're getting here from Picard. Like, just because the old ways were this way doesn't mean that they're that way now.
Right.
You know? So we can go to this planet and hope for the best and offer gratitude, acceptance, openness, and that's all we can do.
Did anyone recognize the sketch drawing of the something flower person? I didn't recognize.
Beautiful flower.
No, flower. The flower person sketched it.
Right.
But it was a picture of Rios with
and
Janna.
And Janna, the other Soji clan.
They're all four-letter names, apparently.
Rios, Janna, Soji.
Yeah. Oh,
Picard.
Mike, you are super racist. Huge. just the worst.
So what are you saying?
I hate unicorns.
What are you saying? You think Rios is a synth?
No.
Four-letter name? Rios, Janna, Soji,
Dodge. Is that his first name? That's not his first name.
No.
Gerard.
It's a Santibal.
Crystal ball.
Crystal
ball.
Crystal
ball. Just seeing Rios. If that was where you were going.
No, I had some other theory when I was like, oh, the eight suns represent the eight synths, and the eight synths are dying.
It's not Battlestar.
They were all sense eight. There's eight of them that, like, but now two of them, at least three of them are now dead. There's five left.
Okay. You're confusing many sci-fi shows.
I think what we have to do is we have to issue our listeners bingo cards for other references so that when Grant talks, you can see who the winner is. And you have to have, like, Lost, Harry Potter,
you have to have Harry
Battlestar
Potter
on there. Yeah. And just, you know, we can...
Bingo card.
We'll look in the chat and see who goes bingo.
So another point in this episode's favor, I really like the scene with Picard describing Data to Soji. You know, any chance we get to see Picard talk about Data, everything I say, he just laughs. Everything. Here's an earnest moment. I like, fuck you.
Fuck you. Oh, no.
I did think some of the he loved you thing was a little,
Wasn't it weird? That's what I was laughing about.
I thought it was rom-com, so I thought it was a little bit like a, it was like, what's the perfect thing that you should say right now? It's, he loved you. And you're like, how do you know that?
I think what was going on, and I think it told the story perfectly of Soji waking up to her, all of her memories, all of her abilities. In that moment, the more Picard talked about Data, the more that she remembered who she was, where she came from, and got more in touch with Data. And she's like, oh, now I remember.
Yeah. So when she says that, I think we could take it as canon. Data loves Picard.
Well, do we think we're going to get Data on the planet?
He was in the vision, but mm-hmm. I think he was only in the vision because his existence represented that singularity point that started to tip off the synthetic building that mm-hmm. could bring this apocalypse to come, right?
But what if there's like a rebuilt Data and he's beautiful flower?
Hey, you
what
can never have enough Brent Spiner. I'm just saying.
Yeah, who is beautiful flower?
That's what I don't know.
Yeah.
I think the thing that was really interesting for me about that particular scene was it made me question, did Picard look at Data as a son? Right?
Yeah.
And that is where we're getting this passion he had for both Daj and Soji, because even though we would really think of, like, you know, their grandfather being, you know, someone like Noonien Soon or something like that, but in this situation, it really does feel like Picard is the grandfather to Soji.
Yeah.
Right? This long lost grandfather she never knew.
Is Picard emotionally, like, immature? Can he not
a little stunted?
Can he not say to people like, "Oh, I love you"? Elnor, I love you.
Yeah, we've discussed this before.
He said he was addicted to him.
Now, we discussed this before where he sets himself apart emotionally from his crew.
Emotional detachment is how he shows his love.
Yeah, well, even in the one, or the, if you think about it, the two romantic interests we've ever seen Picard even attempt to have, whether that's with Beverly Crusher or, Vosh, right? And both of those, it didn't work out well because he could not communicate or engage in these relationships well.
Well, I guess that's why it bugs me. It's like, from what I understand, Data has saved his life a lot of times. I have a blanket I can easily say I love. I love this blanket. I'll snuggle under that blanket and I fucking love it. And he can't even say he loves Data, who saved his life.
Well, I think
I love a dog. And it's like, that's a different wavelength level there between us. I love dogs.
But I think that's what makes this work in this kind of familial relationship, because we're seeing that Picard is basically an android, right? Mm. He's got all of the logic and the competence and the leadership and zero of the emotion.
But no, that's what they did with, that's the whole Vulcan thing, right? That's what Spock was. Spock is the guy who's not in touch with his emotions. I thought Picard was. Like, he's the one.
But there's, I think, a difference between, like, the way a human blocks off emotions and the way the Vulcans embrace logic. I think it's a different, like, wavelength, because the Vulcans, I think, try to understand emotion. And, like, even Spock eventually has love and understanding, and his relationship with Kirk is like on a different level, and you see their friendship really blossom and him embrace that, versus Picard, I think, just continues to distance himself anytime there is an opportunity for emotional hurt. You gotta find the root of his trauma.
Picard, you hurt me, man. Jeez.
I want to dive into some Easter eggs. This episode was kind of loaded with them.
There's quite a few.
Yeah. Deep Space 12 was mentioned. Man. That's the highest deep space station we've ever heard on Star Trek. We've heard about Deep Space 5, Deep Space 3, of course, Deep Space 9. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
How about that one?
Anybody want to wager, does DS-12 have a Quark's bar?
I hope so. It's a chain by now, I would assume.
Yeah. I'm a little sad we didn't get there, because I thought that was going to open us up to a lot of throwbacks.
Yeah, it would have been cool, right?
Maybe we'll end there, so that's where season 2 will jump off from.
Everybody just has a beer at Quark's Bar.
You think we'll see some cameos from some Deep Space 9 folk that have transferred over there?
That'd be nice.
Miles O'Brien.
I was going to say.
Fucking Cotties.
Can you have a Star Trek series without a little Calmini in there?
You have to, right? I mean, he's in all of them. Jurati's tracking tech was a Viridium tracker. And in Star Trek VI, Spock slaps a Viridium patch on the back of Kirk to track him. So that's keeping in continuity.
Cannon.
That was cool.
Nice.
Like you pointed out earlier, Rios' engineering hologram is Scottish, like mm-hmm. Scotty. And he calls people Lassie, like Scotty did.
I didn't know what that Ken was. I guess it's a word can.
Mm-hmm. Well, no, it's like it to grok, to understand.
Nope, that's another word I don't know.
Did you guys have a favorite hologram?
Yeah, I always like the pilot.
Okay.
Oh, I think
he's cool. Yeah.
Enoch.
Was that his name?
Yeah, he said
Ethan or something.
He said Enoch.
I think my favorite was the concierge dude. I don't know, but the one who's a close talker.
Yeah,
I love that. She's just like, oh gosh.
She pulled a Neo Matrix move to get away from him. Yeah. I thought that was amazing.
It was like a Seinfeld bit. I'm like, it was funny.
Real fun moment. Rio's old Starfleet ship, the Ibn Majid. Is that how you pronounce
yeah,
it?
Yeah, Ibn Majid. Okay, Ibn Majid. You
possibly named after Ahmad Ibn Majid, an Arabian sea navigator born in the 1430s.
Likely.
Yeah. Checks out with his literary.
I'm a real big fan of, seafaring navigation.
What?
I feel like you would be.
Did you know my dad's a boat captain? We can talk about this later.
I mean, I do need a bigger boat.
Not the first half Vulcan, half Romulan we've seen on Star Trek and TNG. In the episode Data's Day, there was an ambassador, T'Pel, who ended up being half Vulcan, half Romulan. And she was always She was taking notes on Data the whole time, which makes me think maybe she's with a Zatbash. Yeah.
Sneaky, sneaky.
Yeah. What else? Soji uses the Borg trans conduit network to jump through space and to get to her home, which is, we saw a little bit of it on TNG, but at the end of Voyager, the Borg conduit network was a huge thing. I think Voyager and Janeway blew it all up to like keep the Borg from traveling to the Alpha Quadrant. And I think, didn't they use it to get back home? Yeah. So that was a good callback. Picard says he was an ensign on the Reliant. The Reliant is a ship that Khan stole in Star Trek II. So Picard was probably on a different version of the Reliant, but still cool. And when he, Rios mentions that the captain that he had that committed suicide was always talking about his former captain. That character, I don't remember her name. Oh, yeah. Marta Batanidis, the captain that Rios' old captain idolized.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that is the character in the episode, TNG episode Tapestry, where Picard gets to relive his old Starfleet Academy days. And he kind of has a little romantic relationship with her. So we've actually seen her on screen.
That's why he's so like, oh, like, I know her.
I know her.
I remember that.
Like, biblically know her. Yeah. Taking me back.
So yeah, some Easter eggs for you.
Did Rios hook up with Janna? He had quite an attachment to this person. Like, I'm thinking,
if he did, he definitely left that out in the story.
It would have to have been
so quickly, because it didn't seem like they were on the ship for that long before they were murdered.
When he first saw Soji and like the camera angles went wobbly and then like the audio went weird, wasn't that a weird way to depict him like going back to his trauma moment? Because it got me wondering, like, is he a synth? Like, what's happening?
Oh, no. I took it as like, oh, that she's totally related to whatever happened to his captain. Yeah. Okay. Trauma.
Really?
Okay. Yeah.
I'm dumb.
Well, I mean, to that question, I guess he knows what her favorite food is. Now, it's a weird food.
Oh, man.
So,
worst scene in the episode by far. The
French
worst
fries and peppermint
scene,
ice cream.
Because not only does he go, hey, French fries and a peppermint milkshake or whatever. And she's like, how do you know? It's like, anyway, let's just go ahead and move on past that and talk about something else. And like, no one's going to touch those. It was just a plot device to say, like, I know who you are, rather than just saying, I know who you are.
What pissed me off so is she didn't eat it, right? Like,
it got knocked on the floor.
Oh, yeah, she threw that shit on the floor.
Come on.
Yeah, you think just, those things are free?
She just ate eggs. She doesn't need it. She's good.
Does she like eggs?
She eats when she's hungry. She drinks when she's thirsty. You're on the same page,
Mariah. That was one of my favorite scenes with Jurati meeting Soji. And yeah, some of the lines were stupid. Like, what do you do when you're thirsty?
But
I drink some shit. But the way that Allison Pill sold it.
Yeah, she was like, oh,
fuck. She was so good. I love me some Allison Pill. We are sex bomb.
You are. I think that was actually a kind of a rehabilitation moment for Jurati, because she's done some horrible stuff.
I mean, dude, it's not her fault.
Sure. She did some horrible stuff.
Don't talk about my girl,
I'm just saying. But in this moment, she became somewhat of a, I don't want to say a long-lost mother, but this was her life's work.
Yeah.
And she got to see it realized, right, by a person who she killed, but who also ultimately was her lover and her mentor, and she got to interact with Soji. Like, that was a huge moment, and it really brought her back from the edge. And so I thought that was a great moment.
And she played the complications of that, of those emotions so well.
I also noticed that she has second billing on the show.
Really?
Yeah.
Cool. She's not going to space jail.
No.
Definitely not.
No. I like after that moment, she shows up on the deck when everybody's having their cards on the table scene. And she's like, hey, guys, I'm not doing the murder anymore.
I'm done with all the
cool,
murdering.
We're cool, right?
Swear it off. Murdering. Turn in a new page.
Turns out it wasn't for me.
Yeah.
The auntie.
Yes. Ramda.
When Elf Girl is talking to her. Man, I don't know names. I'm sorry.
Narissa.
Yeah. She says that her aunt, because of having touched the alien green table thing and having that vision, her mind was able to corrupt the Borg cube.
Yes.
Isn't that pretty
Through
significant?
Despair.
Mm-hmm. Like, she was so fucked up that they just like went and shut down.
Well, I she mean, was so depressed it infected the entire cube.
Just like she went full Eeyore.
Is that them setting something up, or is that them just trying to sell the idea of this vision being so dark and mind breaking?
I mean, maybe a little bit of both.
Yeah, I think what we when you know about the Borg and you know that when you become assimilated, they basically know everything you know, and so if this thing, this vision, is just so horrible. As the Borg cube would know it, I can understand how it would break it.
Crazy theory time.
Oh, here we go.
Crazy theory time. If we go, if Picard and everybody shows up to the synth planet and the synths are cool, and this whole apocalyptic thing is not real, right? Is season two going to be the Borg learning from Tarot Card Lady that the synths are evil and can kill everyone? Trying to come kill the synths? Like, I didn't articulate that very well, but you know what I mean.
I'm picking up what you're throwing down.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, I have another crazy theory.
Do it.
Okay. The Borg is reactivated by Seven of Nine, and that cube is dangerous again. But we know something can shut it down. Someone having a big case of the sats, right?
Girardi.
But what have we seen on La Serena? A whole bunch of sad people, right? But what if each of them individually isn't sad enough? So they have to Guardians of the Galaxy this shit. Another reference for you. And they have to join forces in with their Borg sadness.
I was
going to
go Captain Planet. I'm not touching your hands. It's, oh, yeah. It's Corona.
I just gave everybody Corona.
I need some Shibona. Hand sanitizer.
I've shaken so many hands. I'm sorry.
Shibona virus.
Shibona virus.
It's not an Austin.
But, you know, I just watched Midsommar. The horror movie. Horror, quote unquote. It's just a really bummer movie. But
it is gory.
Yeah, I was expecting something like
no hot freaks on Midsommar. Let's go.
Okay, anyway,
sorry.
It is a movie that definitely deals with how one deals with grief.
Correct.
And I just kept thinking, like, you know what? Rios really just needs to go to that grief planet with a green table. It's called Grief Planet. Seems like a good place to go. He needs his own kind of Midsommar thing where he needs other people that aren't holograms that like can totally relate to him.
That he can be covered in flowers and yell.
Yeah, he needs other people that can be a wailing wall with him in a way. And
he needs to go to the admonition. That's what they call it.
The silly. Yes.
That's silly.
Instead, he's got a really sad mess hall on his, like, or whatever, that table, that dining table.
Those whole
thing is just darkly lit and sad.
Those tables look like what you have at like a really run down elementary school, right? Like playground right? Yeah. Table.
Like a playground table. Yeah. I was like, oh, wow, they're hanging on the playground.
And when I saw all his books, all I could think of, like, wow, when I was in my 20s and super depressed, that was my bookshelf.
Yeah. He's a really depressed college PhD candidate.
I mean, I'm a little disappointed that there's apparently no Netflix in the future.
No Netflix.
I mean, because I thought that it would be a great opportunity for him to go back into his cabin and like binge something, kind of hang out. But no, he's listening to Walkman's record players. And
we all handle depression in different ways.
Yeah.
Did anybody else laugh out loud when Picard realized he couldn't fly the ship?
I did.
That was my. I just laughed
I'm gonna
out loud.
Take, oh shit!
My whole thing was,
I don't know how to
get the hell
this.
Out of that man's chair.
Where's like, the big red button I pushed?
Right. Like, this ain't your ship, buddy.
That was so good.
What do you mean? I just can't say engage.
Yeah.
Should we solicit
audience
questions? If you guys are checking us out over on YouTube, right about now would be a good time to think of what questions you have and hit us up. Go ahead and tag us at Star Trek Pod, or you can write the word pod in all caps, and we'll go through and check those out. And before we get to that, real quick, I wanted to point out another couple things. One, she knew, like, immediately, she being Soji, when she jumped in to hack the ship, how to allow planes or allow the spacecraft, whatever they're called,
planes,
to jump through the Borg wormhole network.
Yeah.
Is that like future technology as far as like this timeline of Star Trek?
Well, yeah. We just talked about it. Where were you?
And well, she also said that she picked
it up. Midsommar, I was thinking about that movie.
She picked it up working with the Borg on the reclamation project. Mm-hmm. So
yeah.
She knew about the network.
Hugh told her.
That was also like Guardians of the Galaxy where they have those little panels and they
bingo
fly through them.
Bingo.
Bingo. Also, there was 2 F-bombs dropped this. Not just one.
Indeed.
There was 2.
It was. I actually liked this one too.
I was just waiting for the Admiral to drop it. I'm like, just do it. Just get it over with. All right.
Shut the fuck up. Shut the fuck up. I think it's an ongoing joke because in no other Star Trek would you ever imagine someone speaking that way to any captain, right?
Like, yeah. I mean, there's a difference between Tilly getting excited and going, fuck yeah.
Right. I would expect someone to say it to like Archer, right? I would be okay with that.
Yeah.
Even though
everybody on Enterprise, like, fuck all of them.
Right. But I think when you're talking about one of probably the 2 most loved captains in the entire Star Trek universe, they enjoy people just telling him this all the time. Like, it's like one after another, like, some they just cut him down. It's a bit of an ongoing gag at this point.
Yeah.
It's like, you're old. We can point out how much of a dick you are now, Picard. Okay, comments, questions. I like that Wasoha says, Grant, looks like he forgot about the podcast and got interrupted during an awkward moment.
Oh. I was at a furry convention. Yeah. And I was like, oh, shit, I'll be right there.
We don't judge.
Run on over.
Hey, whatever you're into, buddy.
Furries.
Yeah. Whatever blows your skirt and floats your boat.
Let's see. We have a question here from, or a comment from, Christopher Curry. Says, I believe the main Borg queen let 7 disconnect. The connections demonstrate the cube is reconnected to the hive.
Ooh.
Queen let her go just as she did in Voyager. Doesn't need her anymore, I'm guessing. So
I don't think it's connected to the hive.
Not yet.
Yeah,
anyway.
I think.
So the hive still exists?
The hive still exists. It's in deep space.
Deep space. Past 12.
But I think 7 of 9, like, I mean, everything that she did, like you guys talked about, was really rushed. You know, I think selling the weight of that moment was all on Jeri Ryan's shoulders. Mm-hmm. And I think she did a great job, you know, with her facial movements and her body language and everything. But and it went by so quickly, it's easy to miss. But she did set it up to where, like, oh, this isn't connected to anything, but I can create a mini collective that I can control.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I don't think there was an outside Borg queen controlling her.
I almost thought that was almost like her safe word was like, Annika has more things to do, was her telling herself, I have more things to do. I need to disconnect.
Yeah.
Yeah. Grant needs another beer. I get it.
You're welcome.
I do that. Another question comes from Guru. My Buddha. I don't.
What is it?
What's the name?
Guru. Tugging my Puda. I don't know about that.
Ayo.
I mean,
I know who that
I'm
is.
I'm not touching it.
What's the question?
If we do see Data on the synth planet, do you believe he would have all of Data's memories or be sort of a reboot of Data? Similarly, would he have the new synth body?
I do think he would have Data's memories, at least the ones that before.
Sorry, the way you like purred after you said body.
Okay. I'm going to keep moving. Because we know that Bruce Maddox was on that planet, right?
Mm-hmm. What if it's just Brent Spiner, right? Like, he doesn't just have to have the gray makeup or the yellow eyes. It's just like, I'm now, like, in humanish form. And I love you, Picard. I love you. You going to say it back? I love you. Love you.
I mean, I think it would be very interesting to see Brent Spiner playing a full non-android-like character.
I think that'd be cool. I mean, he played Soong back in the day.
He did.
He played Soong as an old man with a bunch of prosthetics on TNG, but then he played him without any prosthetics on Enterprise.
Yeah.
And did a really good job, even
though
Enterprise sucks.
Like a bunch of Datas. What if they're just a bunch of, like, Datas and Sojis and Dot? Like, they're all just, like, the same, like, replicated over and over again?
Silly.
It'd be kind of funny, right?
Silly.
Oh, apparently that was Drew on the chat had that same theory. So,
thanks, Drew.
Props. You got there first. I think that's a good idea.
Chupi says, I told you all she was a Vovolan.
Vovolan?
Vovolan.
What's a Vovolan?
It's a Vulcan Romulan.
Vulcan Romulan.
Oh.
You're right, Chupi.
That's easy to say.
You were right.
Shout out to Chupi.
I was still confused up until this episode. Like, is she, I thought she was a full Romulan, but.
half. I thought she was a full
Carolyn
Vulcan.
Carolyn K3. I was about to say 3,000. Says, Pod, with lines like with Jurati and Soji, were just like when Data first interacted with his mom. Once she revealed herself to him, and they chatted in 10 forward. She even asks about his sex program.
That happened, apparently.
I don't know.
I don't remember that episode,
but I don't remember the details. But I will revisit it because I would like to see Data's mother ask him about his android boner.
Would you?
I mean, yeah.
I mean, if that's what you're into.
Oh, okay.
Well. Again, this side of the table is into some very interesting things.
I mean, furries and android boners. I don't know. I don't know what about that side.
Shea boners.
Shea boners.
Jordan Stevens says, Soji said she didn't know how she knew about the conduit and that she must have heard about it in her research. Mm. Clearly, that's a misdirect. She's Borg 2.0 for sure.
Maybe.
Ooh, good theory. Perhaps.
Yeah, we've been. I think
good
we
theory,
spun,
hubby.
We spun a few. Oh, really? We spun a few theories about how, you know, how the new synths might be the new Borg.
Oh. Ah, okay. Check this one out. Drew Sack says, Pod, maybe beautiful flower is Narek, and Rizzo and the Zot Vash are manipulating him into helping them manipulate Soji. That one's a fucking bonkers theory right there.
I'm into
I love
it.
That. Her weird sexual manipulation would be foreshadowing the reveal. So she's all up on her brother, but it's not her brother. It's a synth who's hooking up with another synth and then trying to kill that synth because he doesn't know he's a synth.
So many layers of synth.
Synth.
Wow.
Okay.
Oh, wait. That was that Narek following them at the end?
Yeah, totally.
That was Boba Fett, I think.
That was Boba Fett.
Yeah. He appears and zoots after him. It's the same exact scene. Yeah. Man. Okay, because we don't know who Beautiful Flower is.
We don't.
It's Brent Spiner.
Yeah, I think it's interesting that we do get these names that are just kind of tossed out there, and we're hoping that they're going to be of relevance.
Yeah. Ooh, other thought about the ship, though, that follows them. What if it's that weird captain that was on the planet with was friends with the kid?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. That could also be that.
Do you guys think Riker's going to be back? Because he was like, I'll only go back in the starship if it's really necessary.
Well, he said, I'll see you in season two.
But do you think he'll be back this season?
Maybe directing.
Mm. Yeah, no, I don't think so.
Does anybody play Mass Effect 3?
No.
Yes.
Okay. Well, Drew Sachs said, this is a plot of Mass Effect 3, an ancient force that shows up to kill the synthetics. Is that true?
Sure.
Hmm.
Drew Sachs.
Yeah.
Clyde.
I'm thinking through. I'm
Drew's
thinking through
bringing the
theories.
Yeah.
And yeah, I mean, yeah, it's been a while since I played Mass Effect 3.
What else we got here? Carolyn says, Pod, she's excited he may have been having sex with Deanna. Troy, I'm guessing. Who's she?
Who's having sex with Deanna Troy?
I think maybe
Riker,
Riker, definitely.
Wasoha says, hey, Pod, did you notice that the conduit portal had the same visual effects as Trek 09 Black Hole? I don't think it's saying anything important, but fun fact.
It was always nice to have little references.
Same production company.
Throughout.
Yep.
All right.
I think
is there any like iTunes shout outs we gotta give or?
I didn't see any on the itinerary for the evening.
Oh, yeah. Answer a few more of these questions, and then I'll bring one up.
Okay. Let's see. I'm gonna zip up here.
We're looking for some questions.
Chris Curry says, Pod, wonder if the Klingon operas will ever be addressed, since that is all the music on the ship.
Yeah.
Those are Klingon operas?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. All Rios has is Klingon operas.
Well, until we get to the vinyl.
Well, that would make sense why the vinyl
Billie
is
Holiday,
so important.
Right? Yeah.
Right? Because if he wants to listen to something else, it can't be through the ship. That makes sense.
Okay.
Okay. So.
Okay. So.
This costume is throwing me off a little bit. If you guys want to give us some 5-star reviews on Apple, we would really love it. It's the way this podcast can really help this podcast grow. by giving us 5-star reviews on Apple, and we'll read them on the pod. And we have one here from Mark R. Pollard. He says, love this podcast. Love the show, guys. Just your balance of fun and nerdom mixed together. Appreciate all your hard work. I think the new YouTube live edition is brilliant.
Thanks
a million for the Pick-Hard Talk podcast, guys. 5 stars.
Pickard.
Pickard.
We got it for you on the YouTubes.
And then Dustin FTW says, I found this crew after listening to a few disappointing Star Trek podcasts, but they are the best. They reign.
But they are the most disappointing. Okay.
They reign in the rambling much better than most have and have some thoughtful perspectives from diverse points of view. They also know their Star Trek history enough to point out deep connections, but manage to never come across as obnoxious fanboys. Mm. I really enjoy hearing their take to help pick up on new things each week. 5 stars. Thank you, Dustin.
Thank you.
Very cool.
I would like to clarify that the person who was excited about Data potentially having sex with Deanna Troi was his mom. I guess his android mom was
like, oh, that's right. Okay. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, because he was speaking of...
That makes more sense.
Because in that scene, Data was speaking about Troi fondly, and the mom's like, hey, you gonna
bang that out?
You gonna bang that out?
Oh, Callie Kovac says, hey, Pod, it's 3 a.m. here in Sweden.
Oh, whoa, hey, Sweden.
Awesome.
Hey.
Hello, Sweden.
I think that's where Midsommar takes place.
It does, yeah.
Enough.
we'll start our Midsommar podcast. Tune in an hour from now.
Usually I save the new episode of Picard for tomorrow, but having found your wonderful podcast, I wanted to stop by and at least say thank you for the wonderful content. Aw.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for staying up.
That's pretty so awesome.
Much. All right.
You may sleep now.
Sleep now. Okay. I think it's time for us to beam the fuck on out of here. You can find us at StarTrekPod.co. Check out all of our back catalog to hear a podcast about every single episode of Star Trek Discovery Season 1 and Season 2. We will be back next week for another review of Picard. We got 2 more episodes of Picard. Maybe we'll do a rack-up episode after that. And then we'll be back for Discovery Season 3. If we get enough live YouTube viewers, we'll do some live podcasts for Discovery Season 3. So keep tuning in live. Tell your friends, tell your family, tell your pets. YouTube.com. Oh, we don't have a YouTube. StarTrekPod.co. Click on that YouTube link. Subscribe to the YouTube. Grant, where can we follow you and your work online?
Baron Von Grant, Twitter, and Instagram.
Mariah.
I'm at Mariah Gossett on all the social media platforms. It's Mariah with a Y and Gossett with 2 S's and 2 T's.
Clyde Haynes.
I'm at Clyde Haynes on Twitter. Mike has convinced me to unprotect my tweets.
What?
And you can find me on the web at keyandclyde.com. That's K-E-I and Clyde.com.
Your tweets are now susceptible to the coronavirus.
They're on the filthiest tweets you've ever read. now everyone's going to see
all that Hyde Clanes fanfic.
Mike convinced you, now you lost your job.
Yeah. All downhill from here.
All right, you can find me at Mike Moody on Twitter. Thanks for listening. Live long and prosper.
Bye.
Bye.
Sometimes you just have to bow to the absurd.